Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point. Ahead of the Spanish Grand Prix, the European season is just about to start in Formula One, and here is what's coming up on today's show. Barcelona is traditionally a time for cars to bring significant upgrades to their cars, so we will be looking at who is doing what. A few races into the season now, we'll take a look at who the best and worst drivers have been in 2022 so far. And then we'll look ahead to the Spanish Grand Prix, where Carlos Sainz is looking for his first victory in Formula One and hopefully his first at home too. But first now, we look towards the team's upgrades for the season. So to join me is John Wilde and Oliver Harden. Gents, how are we?
Good, thanks. Yeah, excited for race week.
Yeah, Oliver, yourself?
Very well, yeah.
Good. So it's the start of the European season. We've got the doubleheader of Spain and Monaco coming for us in the next week or so. But this is now the time for teams to really start building up their cars, isn't it, John? And that Aston Martin look to be the ones who have made the most ground.
Yeah, they have a lot of ground to make up, don't they? Aston Martin being a really poor start to the season for them. Struggled to get any points together so far. They finally sort of make the breakthrough a couple of races ago. But it has been a struggle. And they're talking about some pretty big upgrades, even to the extent of perhaps even half a car, I've been reading. So, we'll see what those upgrades, what difference they can make, and see if they can push themselves further up the grid and up into the points.
Yeah, and Oliver, that's a key point as well, isn't it? I mean, there's talk of it almost being a B-spec car just five races into the season. I mean, above all, being an admission that whatever they've designed for the start of this season hasn't quite gone right. I mean, at least it's a show of intent that they're looking to get on top of it quickly.
Yeah, they've had a really terrible start to the season. They've struggled most of all, of most of the teams, with the porpoising phenomenon that we've seen up and down the grid. Which is strange, really, because when you see onboard footage of the car, they don't seem to have as much porpoising as the rest of the teams at first glance. But that perhaps maybe is an indication of how much porpoising they're suffering and how high they have to run the ride height so they can eradicate it, perhaps. As far as Stroll's, grand plans for this team is concerned, it's been a terrible start to the season so far.
And John, from that point of view as well, at least they're trying to be proactive from that point of view. And there's talk that they may only be able to run these upgrades on one car, Lance Stroll's. I mean, at the time of recording, we have approached Aston Martin for comment on this. So if there is any update since we've recorded, then it will be on planetf1.com. So if they are able to do that on one car, it's better than none, I guess.
Yeah, it's looking very much as though it would be Lance Stroll's car rather than Sebastian Vettel's, wouldn't it? It's entirely down to the team what the reasons for that are. It's up to people to sort of make deductions for themselves on that. But I think what they will be looking to do is for Sebastian Vettel to run the old spec car, if that's how it turns out, and sort of compare the data between the two. But regardless of whether it's on one car or two, they need to make some big improvements pretty quickly, or they'll find themselves cut adrift near the bottom of the standings.
And one team that did find themselves almost cut adrift outside the points in Miami was McLaren, but they have confirmed as well, Oliver, that they're bringing upgrades to their car this weekend. They did say early in the season that how well they'd be doing would depend on the tracks, and that sort of has rung true, really.
It has, yeah, and we have to remember that they excelled at Barcelona in pre-season testing. Obviously, didn't go too well at the start of the season, but obviously Lando did. Lando Norris did score that podium in Imola. It does seem like they're slowly getting there to where they were last season.
Yeah, slowly but surely, John. It's a very strange one from their point of view, having been so up and down. Especially, like, I think Miami is a prime example of that. Really, I mean, neither car really looked like they were going to score points even in the race before Lando Norris had that crash.
No, they've just been so unpredictable, haven't they? I mean, Lando Norris's results graph was looking very promising before Miami. He got the podium at Imola, didn't he? I think it was 7th, 5th, 3rd. Was it even going to look like a win there, you know, to continue that graph at Miami? But it didn't, you know, showed no signs of working out like that whatsoever. And obviously, in the end, he had that collision with Pierre Gasly and crashed out when, you know, a points finish was about as much as he could have taken from that. So, yeah, it remains to be seen what they can do in Barcelona, but certainly they've been pretty much all over the place in terms of their achievements so far.
And Barcelona is the track where probably the most upgrades are seen in Formula One, especially the early part of the season, because Oliver, there is so much data that the teams already have. So in terms of upgrades themselves, this is probably the prime place to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a really good opportunity to compare where they were in pre-season. Well, obviously, the first test took place in Barcelona. It's a good opportunity to see how far they've progressed or in some cases otherwise since then.
But one team who really, really still needs to progress is Mercedes, John. I mean, they say they're starting to find answers. They call themselves specialists in bouncing after Miami. But, you know, there's been this talk all season, but they're sort of slowly getting there. They're getting there. But it doesn't look like there's been too much progress yet. So hopefully Barcelona will be a good sign for them.
Yeah, we've just heard from Toto Wolff this morning in the team's preview of the Spanish Grand Prix. He says they've got some, and I quote, some answers and indications from Miami in terms of setup and things like that, that they're going to try out in Barcelona. I mean, there's been talk that they might even sort of consider going back to scratch with the design of the car, which would be a pretty radical attempt to work out what's troubling them. But I just get the impression that there doesn't look to be too much in the way of big upgrades coming from Mercedes at Barcelona. I think it was, you know, it sounded a bit of a sort of a corporate message from Toto that, yes, we've got some things that we can try out and we're hopeful, but I wouldn't say we're going to suddenly see them sort of competing for pole positions and wins this weekend. I think it might take a fair bit longer before that's in the offing.
Yeah, one thing I found interesting before after Miami, Oliver, was the fact that Wolff did say, you know, that they're kind of confident in the car concept that they still have, but they've not yet capitulated, in his words, and gone to simpler solutions. So it may have a sort of short-term effect of like having a simpler design on the car may be faster now, but from the sounds of it, what they're trying to do is hopefully going to be faster for them further down the line. So it looks like a waiting game for them.
Yeah, it does feel like, you know, they could be getting there. There was obviously that Friday performance in Miami where they were just, it was almost as if the start of the season never happened. They seem to have been stumbling around in the dark a lot at the beginning of the season, not really knowing why they're slow, not really knowing why they're fast, and as was the case in Miami either. And maybe, you know, their performance that day was maybe just a slight glimmer of hope to give them a sense of direction going forward. I was reading Adrian Newey's book over the winter at last, and he said the main aims when it comes to new regulations is to find something that can be a concept that can be evolved over, you know, the length of the regulations, but also which is quite difficult for rival teams to copy. And you know, Mercedes have committed to that with the zero side pod concept, and the fact that they show no real signs of you know backing out of it just yet shows they still do believe that there is potential there.
And that's it, John, isn't it? You see these innovations, but like from Mercedes' point of view, it's almost like, well, again, it's the waiting game point, because once that seems to click for them, they could well be mixing it right at the top again.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other quotes that Toto came out with in his preview was that in terms of the season, we're just coming up to if it was a basketball game, we're just coming up to the end of the first quarter. So there's an awful lot of the game left to go, a lot of time for things to turn around for them. So if they can find a solution to the porpoising and what's been troubling them so far, there's still sort of 17, 18 races for them to make up the ground. And they're not that far away in terms of the standings in the constructors. They've been managing to sort of notch up the points as they go along. And they're in no man's land, aren't they? They're sort of quite a way behind second place and quite a way ahead of fourth. But if they suddenly got to a position by, say, mid-season going into the second half, whereby they're regularly sort of starting on the front row and getting first and second places in races, then they can eat into those deficits very quickly. And it would be dangerous to rule them out completely at this stage.
I mean, it'll probably be a very big ask for them, but one of the teams they are trying to catch is Ferrari, and they are supposedly bringing upgrades with them to Spain as well. And Mattia Binotto said, Oliver, that they're probably maximum about 0.2 behind Red Bull at the moment, but Red Bull are still looking quite imperious. So it's looking like a tough task for Ferrari, even with these upgrades working.
Yeah, I really liked what Ferrari did last week. They had the filming day at Monza. I think in this age of limited practice time, I think that's a really good move from them. You know, so they do have some real world data when they rock up in Barcelona to begin practice, so they can spend more time optimizing it. Obviously, Verstappen has won the last two races. There does seem to be some momentum building there, but you know, everything's riding on this package for Ferrari to strike back.
And that's another point, John. I mean, we don't know exactly what Ferrari ran in this filming day, but they did this tyre test at Imola, and, you know, everything was confirmed that everything was above board, so they weren't running any new parts or anything like that. So this filming day is a slight unknown for them, but it's a good chance for them to get, you know, any track time is good track time, isn't it? But doing it around Monza too, that's something that they can lean on for this.
Absolutely. And the other thing was Charles Leclerc was also on track at Monaco on Sunday, wasn't he? Driving an old car of Niki Lauda's, but that didn't go very well at all, did it? Because he took the rear wing off the car. So it's a big couple of races ahead for Ferrari, I think. These are tracks that should suit them more than Miami by the look of things. But obviously, with Charles Leclerc's terrible record at Monaco, which is coming up just a week and a half from now. He'll hope to get a really strong performance in Spain under his belt, and then he can turn attention to Monaco and try and redress that dreadful record he has on his home circuit.
Yeah, we should say for clarity as well that his brakes failed. He didn't just pile it into the barrier at Rascasse. So it was Niki Lauda's 1979 Ferrari as well. So probably a very, very, very valuable piece of kit. So from his point of view, Oliver, he'd hopefully the Monaco curse has gone for him already. But it's looking like a very big weekend for Ferrari, isn't it?
Yeah, Verstappen and Red Bull have obviously stepped up in recent times. It obviously didn't help when Leclerc spun towards the end in Imola. He did well to recover a few points out of that. But yeah, it's been a while since, you know, the last win now, so they really do need to go out to winning ways to protect the points lead.
And now five races into the season as well, we are going to take a quick look at the best and worst drivers of 2022 so far. We're using that Toto Wolff analogy of it being the first quarter of the basketball game, John. I think we're all pretty much in agreement that the two very best drivers of the season have been Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen, but we're going to take a look a little bit behind that. So John, you've written a feature for siteplanetsport.com on who you feel has stood out the most this season. And the first one you picked is George Russell.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Max and Charles speak for themselves, don't they? They've been in a class of their own. So I had to add three more drivers to the list. And the first one was George Russell. And it's very difficult not to be impressed by the way that he's come in at Mercedes. It's a difficult, you know, scenario for him, isn't it? Because the car is nowhere near as competitive comparatively as it has been in the past. But he's made the most of it. He's the only driver to finish in the top five in every race this season. And in the last four of those, he's finished ahead of Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he has had a bit of good fortune on his side, but I think he's driven really, really well. He has been quite vocal about the car and the porpoising, but that's no bad thing. It's good for him to get his message across and sort of in the efforts to try and improve the car. And yeah, I mean, his consistency and his pace. I mean, he struggled a little bit in qualifying at Miami. Might not necessarily have been all down to him that, but good performance in the race. Took advantage of the timing of the safety car after starting on the hard tyres. And he's got a big lead over Hamilton in the championship. And I think that's as much as you could ask for from him at this stage.
That's it, Oliver. 23 points, the gap. I mean, obviously, Lewis Hamilton has had his fair share of bad luck, where Russell's had his fair share of good luck at that time. But it's already looking like Russell is, you know, more than a match for Hamilton in the same car. And we knew things would be close between them this season, but maybe not this close.
Yeah, the gap is 23 points, but I think Hamilton would say it might as well be 80 because they're not in you know, contention for victories and titles at this stage of the season. He's adapted very well. I think a large element of it has been luck, but also psychology. You know, Russell has never known anything different from this at Mercedes. He has everything to gain, and Lewis obviously coming from losing the World Championship in the circumstances that he did last season. It's a very difficult thing to take, suddenly be scrapping over points. But Russell, as far as he's concerned, it's been a very, very encouraging start for him.
And his the man he replaced at Mercedes, John, Valtteri Bottas, he's looked, like we said before about how he looks like a man reborn on this podcast before, and he really does, doesn't he? I mean, 30 points in now for Mayo, just five races in. That's a real sign of just how much he seems to be enjoying his driving at the moment.
Yeah, I took a few knocks from marking him down a little bit after his performance at Miami, where he made that mistake that conceded two places to the two Mercedes drivers late on. I think probably I should have given him a bit of a higher rating for that in retrospect. But in defence, it was about two o'clock in the morning when I was writing it. So, but no, on the whole, Valtteri's had a really, really good season, I think, so far. He's come in, as you say, he's got 30 points on the board already. Xiao Guan Yu, his teammate, has just got the one that he picked up in Bahrain. I mean, obviously, he's a lot more experienced, Bottas. So, you know, you can't really read too much into that stat. But he's, you know, he's showing that, you know, he's very much the driver still that he's been for the last 7 or 8 years in Formula One. You know, he had 100% record of winning Constructors' Championships at Mercedes. You know, he was, in some people's eyes, perhaps a little bit unlucky to have been given the heave-ho last season. But he's coming at Alfa Romeo, who've got a much more competitive car comparatively than they had previously, and he's made the most of it. He's been absolutely up there. He qualified fifth in Miami, finished seventh. He's had four top eight finishes. And I think that's a really good testament to what he's been producing for them.
And he said there's been nothing personal in the sort of fights he's been having with the Mercedes, Oliver. But I think, especially in Imola, chasing down George Russell and being in the mix with them in Miami, I mean, that he must have had a smile on his face doing that.
Yeah, it must be a good moment whenever Toto and Valtteri cross each other's paths in the paddock at the minute. It was a real shame that his mistake in Miami let both Mercedes through. He does, as John said a few weeks ago, it does feel like Bottas has been almost taken back to his Williams days, where, you know, he's no longer the disappointing, uninspiring number two to Hamilton, but, you know, the driver with everything to gain. He obviously reveling in the authority and the freedom that he has at Alpha. And yeah, it's been a really good start season. Good to see for him as well.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty much the widely held view that everyone's pleased to see it, John, aren't they? I mean, he's extremely well-liked within Formula One, clearly. And for him to now have this freedom, he just looks like someone who is just, yeah, as I said before, just really enjoying himself.
Yeah, very, very talented driver. That's why he got the opportunity at Mercedes in the first place when Nico Rosberg retired so abruptly at the end of his 2016 World Championship campaign. But yeah, he's come in there. He's the team leader. He's Alfa Romeo are building everything around Bottas. He's there to act as something of a mentor to Zhou as well. And yeah, he's making the most of his opportunities, 30 points on the board, going well in the championship. And, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him on the podium at some stage this season.
It's a bold claim, but you lead us on to your last driver who you have chosen as one of your best drivers of the season so far, and that's Alex Albon. When you speak of drivers making the most of their opportunities so far, I mean, he really has done that, hasn't he?
Yeah, he definitely has. He's scored two points in two races so far, and the vast majority of that has been down to Albon, I think, rather than the car. I don't think that Williams is a point scoring car by any means in the sort of normal run of events, but he produced a sort of a tyre preservation masterclass, didn't he, in Australia to finish 10th there. He added another couple of points to his tally in Miami last time out. When you compare it to where his teammate is, who's constantly at the back, Nicholas Latifi, you know, Albon is filling the boots that George Russell vacated last season very, very well indeed. And he's absolutely getting 100% and more out of a Williams that is, you know, really should be sort of one of the back marking cars.
Yeah, and Oliver, it seems like Albon is almost having a Bottas-esque season in that now that he's not got the pressure of a high-flying teammate next to him, he's been able to sort of, like, so-called spread his wings himself, hasn't he?
Yeah, it really suits him, Williams. I must admit, I was concerned that you know, Williams really would struggle in life after Russell. He was obviously such an important part of that team. But Albon, it came to my attention recently that he's been doing some work with Rob Wilson, who's coached people like Kimi Raikkonen, Bottas himself in the past, working on the technique. It's obviously paying dividends. And he really is an effective performer for them this season, yes.
And unfortunately now we must sort of look at the drivers on the flip side of that, really. The people who really sort of haven't lived up to expectations, John. I mean, I think unfortunately all three of us are in agreement that Nicholas Latifi is kind of in that bracket, isn't he? Where Albon and Latifi were teammates in Formula 2, they just kind of look a pass apart at the moment, really.
Yeah, their careers have diverged quite markedly since then, haven't they? And Latifi, I'm afraid there's just been no promise from him whatsoever, has there, all season. He's just been sort of consistently qualifying on the back row, producing nothing in races. He said he's found the car very difficult to drive. Unfortunately, he does get tagged with the label pay driver, doesn't he, because of the funding that his father brings to the Williams team. But there is a suspicion now that his days could be numbered because of the fact that Williams are bringing Nyck de Vries in for a free practice one run on Friday in Spain. Not in place of Latifi, actually, but in place of Alex Albon. But that does make you actually even more suspicious that the writing might be on the wall for Latifi, because if they'd taken Latifi out of the car, that might have sort of just, you know, flag things up a little bit more than the team would have wanted to, perhaps. There is this rule in place now whereby teams have to give a rookie driver an FP1 outing or two per season. And De Vries is actually the first one who comes in for that in Spain. And we'll see what he can do. But if he puts on a relatively sparkling performance and shows up Latifi, then it could be quite a sign of things to come, I think.
I know it's all speculation for now, Oliver, but the fact that Williams have gone for a Mercedes reserve rather than their own Imre Nissani for FP1 is a little sign of something, surely.
Quite possibly, yeah. But I think we also have to remember that, you know, they picked a Red Bull driver in Alex Albon.
Yeah, of course.
For the full time seat this season over Nyck de Vries. It's perfectly possible. I think it's becoming harder and harder for Latifi to justify his place on the grid. He used to be just slow. Now he's just adding crashes to that, particularly in Saudi Arabia and Australia as well, with strong and qualifying. And I think, you know, since the takeover of Williams a couple of years ago, I don't think the same need for his funding is there like it used to be. So all of a sudden, he's incredibly vulnerable, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and Jos Capito said, John, earlier in this, well, I think even after Miami, that replacing him mid-season is just not going to happen. But it makes you wonder how patient they're going to be with him, even through all this.
Yeah, I think the team would have to deny it, wouldn't they, at this stage? You know, they can't really sort of leave the door open, can they, to suggesting that that he might be replaced, because he'd just be asked about it after every race, wouldn't they, pretty much? But, Latifi needs to improve big time, you know, as soon as possible. But quite frankly, I'm not seeing those signs that it's going to happen. And I really do think the writing's on the wall for him at this stage.
And let's move on now, Oliver, to someone who, it feels kind of harsh to put him in the bracket of worst driver of the season, but possibly one of the most, say, underwhelming, at least, Mick Schumacher. He's looked closer to Kevin Magnussen in the last couple of races, but he still just hasn't, you know, he hasn't quite got that edge about him yet, has he?
Yeah, he looked very impressive alongside Mazepin last season, his rookie season, but there are levels and there are levels. And I think Magnussen coming in and performing at the level as he has kind of exposed Schumacher. I don't think he quite has the potential that many people would like him to have. Obviously, a lot of people are rooting for him because where he comes from. But, you know, it doesn't help himself with the crashes. It's something he hasn't ironed out from his rookie season. Obviously, the crash in Saudi Arabia Saudi Arabia qualifying. It's all of a sudden he doesn't have the same shine as he did last season.
And we were actually on the topic of crashes, I mean, crashing into Sebastian Vettel in Miami as well, John. I mean, we've spoken about the possibility of him like overdriving to try and get himself into the points, and that still seems to be the case for now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree with Oliver there in what he said. I think the thing with Mick is he might just be trying a little bit too hard. I mean, Kevin Magnussen was one of the drivers that I very nearly put into the five best. He missed out. I think I wrote he missed out by a sort of a metaphorical few thousandths of a second compared to Alex Albon. It was a real photo finish between them. I had them both written down on my list and eventually put the line through Magnussen, you know, quite harshly, it could be said. But, you know, the way he's come back into the team, and he's been racking up the points. I think he's got 15 points now. Mick's yet to score. You know, Mick, he could scent the points in Miami, couldn't he? As the race was sort of degenerating into a bit of a mistake fest towards the end, wasn't it? With drivers perhaps getting a bit tired and hot in the difficult conditions there. And he sent one up the inside of Vettel and unfortunately took them both out of the race. And yeah, that's exactly the sort of thing that he doesn't need to be doing. And it has happened sort of once or twice too often during his career so far. I think he just needs to, rather than try too hard, just sort of tone it down a notch and just let his talent flow a bit more. And then hopefully we'll see him open his account before too long.
From Mick's point of view, Oliver, I mean, he clearly has the pedigree in Formula 2 and Formula 3 that he's brought with him to Formula 1. And Gunther Steiner sort of made the point that he now needs to get used to racing other cars in Formula 1. I mean, he's not had the chance to do that. But do you think once he's able to iron that out, that he'll be able to sort of climb back up towards Magnussen?
It's a question of getting that first points finish over the line, I think. And once he does that, he's going to fly. You know, but the problem is, you know, the longer he waits, the more crashes he makes and the more mistakes he makes trying to get that first points finish over the line. You know, it's going to breed pressure. And pressure, as we know, breeds more mistakes. So, you know, it's all a matter of that first top 10 finish and the confidence that will breed for him.
Yeah, absolutely. But there are a couple of drivers that we probably need to give mentions to in this, at least. And John, you put Pierre Gasly forward in this.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, just as a driver who's kind of just underwhelmed me a little bit this season, really. I'm not saying there's been anything particularly too wrong with the way that Gasly's performed at all. I still think he's got lots and lots of potential and could well be a driver for a top team eventually. But just don't feel he's really kicked on this season is the way I would describe it compared to last year. I mean, I know the AlphaTauri hasn't been as competitive generally, but I think there's been a bit of a sort of a difference between the performances of Gasly and Yuki Tsunoda, his teammate. I think Tsunoda has pushed on towards Gasly a bit more this season. Gasly's not been consistently qualifying in the top six as he was sort of this time last year. I mean, again, like I say, the car isn't as good, but I would like to see a bit more from Gasly, and you know, hopefully he'll return to his best form in the next few races.
Yeah, Oliver. I mean, it looks like he's kind of auditioning for a top drive, doesn't he? I mean, his contract at AlphaTauri isn't up until the end of next season, so we should make that clear. But he probably needs to get back on form, doesn't he, if he's going to keep his name in the mix for these top seats when they become available.
Yeah, and his loss of form has come at a really bad time, actually, for his prospects going forward. You know, obviously he's been riding on a wave for the last two seasons, obviously with that victory in Monza and a host of other stunning performances. He hasn't been helped that, you know, AlphaTauri have probably taken a bit of a step back this season, as well as Tsunoda coming to the fore. It has come at a bad time for him in terms of his career going forward.
Yeah, definitely. But the last person that we should mention here, Oliver, I mean, is Daniel Ricciardo. Of course, he's Zach Brown did say that, or Andrea Seidel, sorry, said that he's looking closer to his best form this season. But even then, I mean, like, let's make it clear that in Miami he was left kind of dehydrated because his drink wasn't filled up as much as it would have been usually, and especially in that heat that would not have been helpful for him. But he's still just not quite that Daniel Ricciardo we know, even after all this time.
Yeah, it does feel like the excesses of you know, the last few seasons maybe caught up with him. I've seen, you know, quotes about him trashing a hotel room.
I think we should make that clear. It was quite a while ago, I think.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I think that was.
Sorry about that. But, you know, I have felt it for a while, and I do feel sometimes like I'm alone in this, that he kind of has suffered a loss of focus since leaving Red Bull. And I do feel like his priorities changed somewhere along the line, which is a real shame because, you know, at his best, when he was winning races alongside Verstappen, he really was one of the best drivers on the grid out there. And now we hear whispers, you know, of Colton Herta maybe coming to replace him in a few seasons. It does feel like the walls are maybe starting to close in on him, and he is getting towards, you know, mid-30s now.
Yeah, and if that was to happen, John, I mean, that again, same sort of situation as Gasly. He's got a contract with McLaren until the end of next year. If you know, if things do keep going the way they are, I mean, what would you say that would mean for his Formula One future?
I think it's quite alarming, to be honest, Henry, for Daniel Ricciardo, because I thought this year was a really good opportunity for him to finally get to grips with McLaren, with it being a completely new car. It wasn't a continuation of the previous one, which Lando Norris was well used to. It was pretty much a start from scratch for both of them. And Norris has handled it an awful lot better. And yeah, Ricciardo just to me seems to be a clear number two driver at McLaren at the moment. He was way down the pack again in Miami last time out. Again, bit like Latifi, I'm not seeing an awful lot of encouragement in terms of his future prospects. And yeah, I mean, it can still come right. I mean, it did for him at Monza last year after a pretty disappointing season. So there's still a long way to go. But in terms of the future, I mean, if it doesn't get any better for Ricciardo this year, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a parting of the ways. Mm.
But let's hope for his sake that he's able to turn it around, because he's probably one of the most popular drivers in the sport, of course. But let's round off by talking a little bit about the Spanish Grand Prix, of course. So home race for Carlos Sainz and Fernando Alonso, John, and Sainz in particular. I mean, he needs it for his own championship hopes, but from his own personal point of view, getting that first win in Formula One, especially at home, would be, you know, it would be really something for him and the sport, really.
Yeah, most definitely. He did a promotional event for the race last week, and he said, he was quoted as saying, there will be nobody wants to win this race more than me, or even as much as me, which is perfectly understandable with it being his home race. Maybe Fernando Alonso might have something to say about that. I'm sure he'll be equally desperate to stand on that top step of the podium, if at all possible. But yeah, better from Sainz, wasn't it, in Miami, finished third on that occasion, back on the podium after a couple of early exits. He'll have all the motivation he needs. This is the race he used to go to as a child. His father, the two-time World Rally Champion, Carlos Sr., took him along to meet Michael Schumacher when he was a little boy. So it's a race he's been going to for an awful long time. And I think he's up into the, I think, is it 130-something, 140-something races he's contested now without a win. It's long overdue. And, you know, there'd be no more popular winner this weekend.
I mean, it still looks like very much the Leclerc versus Verstappen show, Oliver, but for Sainz, I mean, Max Verstappen was quite keen to say last year at Zandvoort that he doesn't get an extra tenth of a second at home, even if it was his home race, because then why would it be different for any other race? But from Sainz's point of view, he really does look bang up for this one.
It does. I remember a few years ago, I think it was his debut season in F1, I think he qualified the Toro Rosso fifth on the grid. So I think it did give him a bit of a boost on that occasion. Obviously, he returned to the podium in Miami after a rough couple of weeks. Hopefully, you know, that could be a turning point in the season. And the one thing he doesn't need is to be crashing and piling more pressure on himself again in front of his home crowd. That would do nobody any favours. But yeah, he has a massive role to play in supporting Leclerc's in supporting his teammates' title challenge from this point going forward.
I mean, he probably won't be ready to admit that yet, John. I mean, he's about, what, 50-odd points behind Leclerc now, but it feels like, even though at this early stage of the season, it's starting to get towards now or never territory for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's increasingly looking like a head-to-head battle for the title, isn't it, between Verstappen and Leclerc. You'd say almost at this stage, sort of on a race-to-race basis, as well as the championship, it's a bit of a coin flip, isn't it, as to, you know, which of them is more likely to come out on top. Yeah, Sainz and Sergio Perez, for that matter, in supporting roles from now on, I would imagine. I don't think it's too early to say that, even five or six races in. I think that's the way it's playing out. And yeah, I think it's Leclerc and Verstappen all the way from here.
Yep. So that actually was going to be my next question to you, John. Prediction for the weekend, is it going to be another shootout between those two?
Yes, I definitely think it will be. The other thing to say is I think the weather looks set fair, doesn't it? I don't think there's going to be any rain around. Looks as though it's going to be dry and sunny in Barcelona, so that's not going to be a factor. It'll be a straight fight for pole position. And then for the race win, who's got the greater race pace? I really think it's a 50-50 call at this stage. Maybe you would say that Verstappen's just got the momentum after those two race wins, but then we don't know what the Ferrari upgrades will do for them. It's a close call at this stage. I think we'll have to sort of wait until the action begins on Friday to make a real sort of definitive judgment about it.
Yeah, a lot of the same school of thought for you, or is there anyone else you reckon can spring a surprise in there?
Not particularly. I do think it's going to be Leclerc and Verstappen all the way. I would echo what John says. You know, it's impossible to tell at this stage. I think for the championship, I think we could do with Leclerc taking another win, because as Verstappen builds momentum, I think it's going to be very hard for Ferrari to live with him. I do think it's going to be very difficult for Leclerc to beat him in a straight fight without a decent car advantage. So for the good of the season, I would hope a Ferrari return to the podium this weekend.
All right, gents, thank you very much for joining me. I'm sure we'll catch up after the Spanish Grand Prix this weekend. And thank you to you for watching or listening as well. Be sure to head to planetf1.com all week. We'll have you more than covered across the race weekend as well. Thank you very much for watching Talking Point, and we'll be with you next time.
Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.